thank you for tuning in to the radio ministry of Clearview Church. At Clearview, our focus is making Christ visible and providing an atmosphere of worship and community. Come check us out at 3485 Oxford Road in Henderson, or visit us online at clearviewbc.org. Now join us for this week's message by Pastor Abadan Shaw.
And this morning, the message is titled, Too Old for Timeout. If you still try to parent them as if they are 5 or 6 or 10 years of age, big mistake. It doesn't work. What do you do? This message is hopefully going to help us understand how to parent a child who is too old for that age of discipline. Let's all stand together. Genesis 34, starting in verse 25. Now it came to pass on the third day, when they were in pain. You say, what are we talking about? As we go through this message, it will make more sense. That two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males and plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. Then Jacob, their father, said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land." We're going to look at that more carefully later on, but how many parents at some point in time have said that to their kids? "You have embarrassed me in front of everybody today." The Bible is such a relevant book. This book is more relevant than your newspaper or the latest bestseller on parenting and child rearing. This book is like describing events that have just happened. "You have made me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I." But they said, "Should he treat our sister like a harlot?" Now, as I typically do in every message, I try to ask a few questions to kind of set the tone, the direction of the message. Kind of prepare your hearts and your minds to hear the message. So here are some of those questions for this message. Question number one, how is your relationship with your children, if you have children? More specifically, how is your relationship with your grown children? Are they at odds with you? Are you at odds with them? What have they done to disappoint you? You say, my kids are little, or we don't have kids. What have you done to disappoint your parents? You know, there's a statement that has been around for a long time. I've heard it years ago, and I still hear it today. It goes like this. It says, when your kids are little, they step on your toes. When they get big, they step on your heart. What have they done? What have your children done to step on your hearts? Are you saved? Are they saved? You see, the most important thing you can do for them, whether it's your parents or your children, is to lead them to Christ if they do not know Christ. And if they do know Christ, is to bring them back to Christ. The most important thing in the message today is not to say, okay, so this is what I'm going to do for my grown kids, or this is what I'm going to do for my parents. The most important thing you can do is to come to Christ. Christ changes lives. Christ changes people from the inside out. It doesn't matter who they are, how many times they have failed. If they come to Jesus, if they come to a church, if they come to a preacher, if they come to a great book, if they come to a study, if they come to a program, it will fail. They come to Christ, Christ never fails. Oh, you may still fail, but he will still carry you. Today's message is going to help us understand what to do when our kids are too old for time out. And I know this message is going to touch each of you at different levels. If you don't have kids, or if you don't have grown kids, it will touch you at different place in your life. That's what the Holy Spirit does. So let's begin. In this series on the family, we've been studying the family of Abraham and Sarah, and then the family of Isaac and Rebekah. Now we are dealing with the family of Jacob and his two wives and two concubines, four wives, so to speak. We're dealing with the third generation. Decisions that have been made are now, you know, bearing fruit. What happens so far, just to bring you up to speed, Jacob has reconciled with his old foe. He has reconciled with his brother Esau. His worst fears are over. Esau, he thought, was going to kill him. God, in his sovereignty, in his grace, has worked it out. They have reconciled. It's time for Jacob to head home. But Jacob is careful. Previously, Jacob did what came natural. Now he is making sure that he does everything just right. He doesn't want to displease God. So what does he do? Listen to chapter 33, verse 18. Then Jacob came safely. He has just left Esau. He comes safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram, and he pitched his tent, pay attention to this, before the city. Jacob remembers how great uncle Lot moved into the city and corrupted himself, and his whole family was destroyed. He says, I ain't going in that city. I'm going to stay out. He pitches his tent outside the city limits. Good. What else? Listen to verse 19. And he bought the parcel of land where he had pitched his tent. Jacob remembers grandfather Abraham. When it came time for him to purchase the land, people wanted to give him the land. He said, oh no, I'm going to pay you for it. Why did he do that? Because he did not want any obligation to those people. He said, no, obligation means compromise. I don't want that. I'm going to pay you fair and square. Jacob says, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to pay for this land fair and square. You see, he's doing everything right. What happens next? Listen to verse 20. Then he erected an altar there and called it El Elohe Israel. Translated for us, it means he built a church. He built a chapel there. Seems like, man, you can't go wrong. Only problem is Jacob failed to realize two things. Number one, Jacob failed to realize that when God called him, he did not call him to go to Shechem. Now, there's a map on the screen. Three arrows. There's an arrow that's coming down from the top, and I know it's hard to read it. But there's an arrow that comes down from the top. That's where Jacob was in Haran. God called him to come and go to Bethel. Genesis 31:13. When God called him, he said, go to Bethel. I'm the God of Bethel. Jacob comes down. Peniel is the place where he wrestled with the pre-incarnate Christ, where God broke him. He crossed over the Jordan River. If you see that line going across in the middle, that's the Jordan River. He crosses over the Jordan River. He is supposed to come down to Bethel. That's the last stop. But he doesn't come to Bethel. He stops in Shechem, which is directly to the north. The point is this. God told him to go to Bethel. He stops in Shechem. Partial obedience is still disobedience. You know, sometimes we as Christians think, if I only do this much right, God should give me credit for that. I don't have to obey him all the way. He told me to do 10. I'm going to do 7. He should give me credit for 7. Folks, it doesn't work like that. I hate to break it to you. The second mistake Jacob made was this. Jacob did not take into account that his little kids were becoming big kids. Folks, there are seasons in life. There's a season where there are no kids. Then there's a season when kids come in. There's a season where you're chasing the kids around. You're getting on to them. You're disciplining them. You're controlling them. You're training them. There comes a season where you have to shift gears. Unfortunately, as a pastor, I have counseled so many people, so many families through the years. People do not understand how to shift gears. Jacob didn't realize that his kids are growing up and they're about to make choices. Well, decision number one. Listen to Genesis 34, verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob. This is Jacob and Leah's daughter. Jacob had 11 sons at this point, but only one daughter. She went out to see the daughters of the land. I looked at this phrase in the original. It literally means to be seen among the women of the city. If you're coming on Wednesday night, you know when we talk about the idiomatic translation, this is what it means. She went to hang out with the young women of the city. Many reasons. Maybe Jacob sent her with a group to go buy something from the market. Maybe Jacob felt bad for her. She was the only girl in a house full of 11 boys. Like maybe she needs some friends. Maybe, as kids do, daddy said it's okay. Well, mom said it's okay. And she said just to ask you. I'm like, wait a minute, let me confirm. Did you say it's okay? No, I said if you're okay with it. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm wondering if Dina played mom and dad. A lot of guilty faces here today. I don't know. Maybe you parents, I have done the same things. I don't know. Nonetheless, she has now gone into this Canaanite city. Now, I'm going to give you an idiom. An idiom is like an old trite phrase. If you lie down with dogs, you'll get up with fleas. It's harsh, but folks, it's the truth. This is what it means. If you hang around with people who don't believe like you or live the same convictions as you do, sooner or later you'll start believing and living as they do. Folks, I'm not talking about controlling your children. What I'm saying to you is this. Unless you're actively leading those people to Christ, they will subtly pull you away from Christ. That's just the nature of things. There is no static middle ground that you can just hang out and never dislodge each other. Sooner or later, someone's going to pull the other. What happens next? She goes into the city, and when Shechem, he is the prince of the city of Shechem. I mean, he's one spoiled brat. I mean, how would you like to have a whole city named after you? The son of Hamor, the Hivite, he is the king. Prince of the country saw her, he took her and lay with her, and here's the word, he violated her. Now some people immediately think that's rape. I don't believe it's rape because in the Hebrew, I believe it actually reads something like, he took her, lay with her, and he shamed her. He brought shame to her. In fact, what I think happened is, she liked him, he liked her, and they had sexual relations. It was consensual. But in the process, guess who looked bad? It's always the girl who looks bad. So what happens here? She has been defiled. But listen, this is how you know it wasn't rape. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, get me this young woman as a wife. You'll remember. In Western society, there's something about being independent that is good and bad. It is good that any time a young person turns the age of 18 or 20 or whatever we consider adult, they are independent. They can do what they want to do. No one can control you. That's a blessing, by the way. That's a great blessing. Because in other parts of the world, whether it's the Middle East or Asia or China and other places, kids forever feel like they got to do what daddy tells them or mommy tells them to do. That is not a good thing. So I believe this freedom that we have in our country in the West is a wonderful thing, but it's also a curse. What do you mean by curse? Because young people feel like if they are an adult, they can do whatever they want to do. And it doesn't matter what the consequences are. If you can raise your children with that independent spirit, at the same time remind them, hey, always remember what you do out there does affect us. Don't. Guard it, no matter who it is, no matter how nicely he speaks. But this young man says, hey, I want to marry her. He tells her, dad, would you do something? word gets back to Jacob. Listen to this. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. You know, the Bible doesn't say one word about Jacob's emotions. Was he angry? Was he sad? Was he indifferent? Was he shocked? Was he disappointed? It says nothing. I personally think that Jacob was worried. Jacob knew his sons. Jacob knew Dinah's brothers. And he is thinking the whole time, if these boys find out, they're going to do some damage. So he doesn't say a word. Later on, his sons are angry with him. That's why they say, should he treat us, our sister, like a harlot? You know what they're really saying is, if you were any kind of man, you would have done something about your daughter. Now, why didn't Jacob do anything? Why didn't Jacob say anything? Because Jacob knows anything he says will be used by his sons to attack those people. Which, by the way, they ended up doing anyways. Sometimes we get angry with our parents for something they did or didn't do in a situation. I've had people talk to me, and they'll something like this. They'll say, you know, when I was going through this and this happened, Mom never said a word. Or I was going through some tough time and Daddy never came through for me. He was so busy with his life. He was so busy with his work and business or whatever. He never was there for me. Here's my word to you. Maybe that is true. But there's also a good possibility that you don't know the whole story. If you could get in a time machine and go back in time and really step into their shoes, you'll realize very quickly how complicated the situation was. Based on what they knew, they did the best they could. Jacob doesn't say a word, but it's not because he doesn't care, because he knows anything he does will be used to start a fight. And it did happen. The brothers came, they found out, and they were shocked, they were hurt, they were angry. And Hamor, the guy's father, the king, came over to talk to Jacob. He said, okay, here's a marriage proposal. Would you please give your daughter in marriage to my son? And trust me, we'll make sure you're happy. You have all rights to business. We are family anyways now, so whatever. And the son speaks up, the prince. He said, let me find favor in your eyes. Whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me ever so much dowry and gift, and I will give according to what you say to me. But give me this young woman as a wife. He is love struck. Jacob doesn't say much, but his sons answered. Listen to what the Bible says. The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, and spoke deceitfully. What I love about the Bible is this. It tells you when people are messing up. Even the heroes, when they mess up, the Bible doesn't sugarcoat the truth. This is how you know this book is the Word of God. It never tries to gloss over the failures of its heroes. They spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister, and they said to them, we can't do this. To give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. What they're saying is this, we are circumcised. So what's the solution? Every male in your city, in your country, has to be circumcised. Jacob, I believe, knew what his sons were up to. Because if those people say, we're not going to do that, the sons would say, well, then you hurt our sister, and there's going to be payback. If they say, okay, fine, we're going to circumcise ourselves, Jacob is thinking, that's never going to happen. So either way, my sons will kill them. Guess what happens? Shechem and his father come home, and they tell the country, the whole land, because my boy loves this girl, all of you men have to be circumcised. Is that cool? They're like, okay, I don't get it. They did it. I don't know what was wrong with them. Maybe something in the air. Maybe they felt obligated. Who knows? And listen to what happens next. Now, it came to pass on the third day when they were in pain. Folks, this is a time before sterilizations and all the proper medical instruments. They got infections, they got fever, and the third day is a bad day for them. The two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. Now it seems kind of, now that's the almost like the downtown of the city. You see the modern buildings surrounding the ruins? Well, the ruins that you see in the middle, I believe, were more like the downtown. The city was much larger. The question is, how come two men can go through this entire city? Even if those men are in pain, they can at least defend themselves. I mean, they can rush them. I don't think it was just two of them. I believe the two were taking charge, but the rest of the brothers followed. And all their workers, all their farmhands, remember, it was like an army. Jacob almost had an army. So you can imagine this was a bold attack, almost like an army assault on the town of Shechem as the men are in pain, they are sick, they're not doing well. And these guys go in and they begin to kill all the men. Verse 26, and they killed Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house. The punishment doesn't fit the crime. Yeah, you messed up with our sister, but our sister is sort of involved, so we're going to kill all of you. This is young people doing what they do even to this day. Have you seen them on television? Come on, y'all. We're living in the 21st century with iPhones and cell phones and laser technology, and yet people get in the streets. Something happens here, and they're throwing rocks at businesses and burning things down. What is the sense? There is no sense. This is what happens when young people do things that feel right. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city. I mean, what's the sense in that? Because their sister had been defiled, they took their sheep, their oxen, and their donkeys, what was in the city, what was in the field, and all their wealth, and all their little ones, this is the worst part, and their wives they took captive. And they plundered even all that was in the houses. Word gets back to Jacob of what they had done. Listen to Jacob's reaction. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, the leaders, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious." The Hebrew word literally is, "You made me stink." Jacob says to them, "You have troubled me by making me stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites." At one time, it was only Esau and his 400 men. Now the entire country is against me. And I am few in number. They will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I. You don't know what you've done. What is their response? Well, just like impulsive young people, they say, "Should he treat our sister like a harlot?" Means you're not a dad enough, man enough to care for your daughter. You expect us men to sit back and watch our sister getting violated? They still didn't get it. Jacob doesn't say anything anymore because there's nothing left to say. And listen to chapter 35, verse 1. Then God said to Jacob, I love that. God didn't abandon him. He knew he was in trouble. He said, "Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel." That's where I told you to go the first place. You stopped in Shechem. All this mess happened. You should have listened to me the first time. Go there, dwell there, not here. Why are you buying this land? Make an altar to God who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother. Meaning, I'm the same God. I didn't tell you to come here, but don't stay here and weep and cry and get angry with your sons. Just go. It's time to go. Folks, many of us don't realize the decisions we made as young people. How did those decisions impact our parents? At the moment, we didn't care. At the moment, we were reckless. At the moment, parents were our enemies. They don't understand. How many of y'all remember your kids telling you that? You don't get it. Like, really? It's like, did we just like drop out of the sky? Like, no, we get everything you're doing. We just see the consequences of your decisions. And we don't want the world to ravage you. We don't want the world to tear you apart. Sometimes people say, oh, that's just, if you control your kids that much. No, it's not about controlling your kids. It's about guiding your kids. There's a big difference. If you control them, if you just hold them like this, that's when they go off and they go off the deep end and all that stuff. That's legalism. But telling your kids, this is not right. This is where you should be. And not putting them in situations where they have to compromise. That is up to us. Dropping them off once a week at church and expecting them to make all the right decisions doesn't work. You have to live a life. You have to live a life that is God-centered. Have you ever wondered why people say, and as a pastor, people tell me that, I wish we never had kids. They tell me that all the time. Folks, that's not the answer. Kids have always been kids. They're going to do what kids do. It's for us to say, what could we do different? We say, well, they're grown now. What can I do different? Let me give you a few suggestions. Number one, let them know that their actions were wrong. Don't ever sugarcoat the truth. Tell them what you did today is going to make an impact on you. It's going to make an impact on us. You have embarrassed us. You have made us stink. Tell them forthrightly. Number two, don't resent your kids. It is so easy to begin to resent them in your heart. Almost feel like, I wish we didn't have them. Don't resent them. Don't be bitter. Jacob did not become bitter against his kids. Forgive them. Admit that you have made similar mistakes as well. How many of us have done the same things that we get on to our kids about? Reaffirm your love for them. Give them the opportunity to make things right. Trust God that He will finish what He has begun in their lives. I believe that. We have a God who finishes what He starts. Some of you, I know you feel like your kid is too far gone. No. Don't let the enemy fill you with that lie. Lastly, pray for them. Don't ever stop praying for them. You can stay up all night worried and angry and frustrated and mad and you know, don't talk to them and all that kind of stuff. Or you can pray for them. Pray for them. You know, our kids may get too old for us to discipline them, but we never get too old for God to discipline us. It doesn't matter if you are 30 years in the faith. It doesn't matter if you are 60 years in the faith. When it's time for your discipline, God does not shy away from taking you to the woodshed. Listen to what it says in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6. For whom the Lord loves, He disciplines. He chastens. You say, well, I'm good. I must not be bad because God is not chastening me. Don't be too quick to say that. But if you are without chastening, verse 8, then you are illegitimate. You know, some of the things that you might be going through right now, and again, don't read too much into what I'm saying. Some of the things, what you're going through, may be God's discipline. That's not bad. It's because He loves us. How many times have you all raised your fist towards heaven and said, God, why do you allow this to happen to me? Instead, you should say, God, what are you trying to tell me? What have I done wrong? If I have done anything wrong, I need your forgiveness. But in all situations, the goal is to be like Christ.
Thank you so much for joining us for this message. Are your kids too old for time out? Remember that you can still let them know that their actions were wrong. Give them a chance to fix the situation. And most importantly, at the end of the day, always remember to pray for them, trusting that God is going to finish the work that He began in them. For more information, visit us online at clearviewbc.org. And for this sermon's notes, check out Pastor Shah's blog at abadanshah.com.